Forgive me as I get ready to read you a list of names. Rome, Rio de Janeiro, Rome once again, Manila. If you've been counting that sequence, it sums up to four. Four venues then for an emblematic event held in these specific cities in the past decade. You may have guessed, it's a world meeting of families, beginning in 1994 under the pontificate of the late John Paul II, the man to invent these meetings and indeed to announce the venue and date of the fifth of them in a television message back in 2003. At the time, he announced the place, Valencia, Spain, and the date, July 2006. But while both the venue and date remain the same ones announced by him, the man to preside over this meeting, on the other hand, is his successor to the See of Peter, Benedict XVI. Once again, stepping into the shoes of his predecessor, he's getting ready to head to Valencia this weekend to preside over the closing of this fifth World Meeting of Families. Meetings which are designed to encourage adults to renew and deepen the faith at a time in history when, as we know, in many Western countries, the institution of marriage and the family has come under attack. And a few days ahead of Pope Benedict's travels, Susie Hodges thought she'd shine the spotlight on the state of the family in the world's biggest Western nation, the United States. In an effort to find out what the church is doing there to counteract such social trends. Stay tuned.
Never has the family been under attack so much as in our present-day society. It's a warning that has been repeated in different forms by Pope Benedict XVI in a number of key speeches devoted to the theme of families in recent months. Against a backdrop like this, it's clear that the Pope's decision to attend the World Meeting of Families in Valencia takes on added significance. Bishop Joseph Kurtz of Knoxville in Tennessee is the head of the U.S. Bishops' Committee on Marriage and the Family and is among the participants at the meeting in Valencia.
Well, I am delighted to know of our Holy Father's coming to Valencia, and it sends a clear message of the priority that our Holy Father brings to his pontificate of the gift of married love and the importance of the foundation of family, not only in our church, but really in all of civilization.
Do you think it's one of the key priorities of his pontificate?
I do. I think the fact that our Holy Father chose the theme of God is love as his first encyclical, and in fact speaks in that encyclical that the love of man and woman for each other in marriage is certainly the epitome, as he says in his encyclical, of love, speaks volumes to the priority that he gives to married love and to family in our world today.
Another member of the U.S. Bishops' Committee on Marriage and the Family is Archbishop Joseph Naumann of Kansas City. He agrees that defending and renewing the state of the family is a key priority for the Pope.
I think the Holy Father understands that the family is so central to everything. I mean, the family has been a great source of Christian evangelization as it passes the faith from one generation to the next. But it's also so important to culture and, I think, to society. And so, yes, I think the Holy Father sees this as a major priority.
The family has been described by Pope Benedict as a basic building block of our society. But in recent years, the prevailing culture in many Western countries has become less supportive of traditional marriage and the family. Archbishop Naumann again.
Well, I think it's not as strong as it was a generation ago, and primarily because I think there are many stresses within our culture on Christian marriage today and marriage in general. And also, in recent years, have had this attempt to redefine marriage, which again is the foundation of the family, and whenever you jeopardize that foundation, you weaken the family. So I think we have many strong, vibrant families. However, I don't think our culture is as supportive today of families as they were a generation ago.
Bishop Kurtz says the family faces a number of key challenges coming from different quarters.
I believe that the attacks, if you will, on marriage come from many fronts. Certainly, there is that strong movement of secularism. However, I think on an individual basis, social scientists are pointing out in the United States that couples still desire a permanent marriage. The difficulty is, of course, their will to make that commitment and that desire real. Many of the supports in the past have been gone to support the permanence of marriage, the closeness of family, of community. And so there is a great need for us as a church to provide those supports to families because their heart still desires, in many ways, that permanence of marriage. The author, George Weigel, in his book, A Letter to Catholics, mentions that what competes with the permanence of marriage is the mantra, keep the options open, which, of course, affects greatly where people work and where they live. And so it's tempting for people to apply that mantra of keep the options open to the intimate commitment of married love.
But although most people still believe in the concept that marriage is for keeps, why are so many couples failing to stay together? And what can the church do to help them?
We have, I would say, three themes that characterize really the opportunity for a great movement and momentum swing with marriage in the United States. First of all, there is the obvious ambivalence among people. Over the last 30 years, the rates of divorce and the rates, unfortunately, of people who choose to live together without the permanent commitment of marriage have grown. However, in these same people, as I mentioned earlier, there still is that desire for a permanent union that I believe there's an ambivalence in people that we as a church can capture and work with. One of the reasons we can is that the social scientists are now speaking in great volume of the effects of divorce and people who choose to live together before marriage on the quality of the lives of the couples, as well as, obviously, on the life of the children who are often part of that union. And this becomes, I think, a stage, if you will, for the church's bold and refreshing teaching on the permanence of marriage to have a day. So I actually feel a great optimism, even in the midst of all the challenges that have been well documented.
Rates of divorce have risen significantly in most major Western countries in recent decades. But Bishop Kurtz says there are some grounds for hope amidst all the gloomy statistics.
Well, actually, the rates of divorce, or what some of the social scientists call the risk of divorce, which is the projection of how likely a divorce is for someone marrying today, have gone up and down. They have, thank God, in the last couple of years, been somewhat stable. One of the things that is the good news is the fact that couples who are better educated are often able to have a will to live together in marriage in a permanent way. And so the divorce risk is now, in some cases, dropping in certain segments of the population in the United States. The reason, of course, I think that divorce has risen is multiple. A primary one is the fact that in our culture, as I said, there is a great sense of people feeling that they want to keep their options open. One of the most discouraging aspects that needs to be turned around is the fact that people who choose to live together before they enter into a permanent vow of marriage tend to have, unfortunately, a greater risk of having a divorce in their life.
One of the more recent threats facing the family are moves to legalize same-sex unions in several Western nations. Bishop Kurtz and Archbishop Naumann are both understandably worried about this new trend.
Yes, the Church, and I particularly am very concerned about this movement to legalize and give status to same-sex unions. And I believe that the majority of the people agree with me on this. When there is a state referendum for the issue of protecting marriage as defined as a union of one man and one woman, in virtually all the states, people speak sometimes at the level of 70 or 80% in favor of the traditional definition of the God-given definition of marriage. It is true that one state has not done that. However, I believe the biggest problem that we have now are very small but very active lobby efforts, and also, unfortunately, judicial systems in which a very small group of judges make significant decisions that actually go beyond the will of the people?
Certainly, I'm very concerned about it in the United States. Now, here, where the people have had an opportunity to vote on it, there's been overwhelming support for marriage, understood as it has been traditionally through culture and for millennia as between a man and a woman. And these referendums on state constitutional amendments are usually passed by 70% or more of the vote. But what the fear here is that, like abortion, that the court will intervene. And that's what's happened in Massachusetts, and that's what we're afraid that our Supreme Court could do, and like abortion, really take away the ability of states to regulate what the understanding of marriage is. So that's a particular fear here in the United States, and there's been a real effort that we hope someday will be realized to put in a federal constitutional amendment that would protect marriages between a man and a woman.
Given all these worrying social trends, Archbishop Naumann says there is no room for complacency, and all the church must mobilize to defend the traditional form of marriage and the family.
We can't take for granted marriage and family life, and so I think those of us who understand and appreciate their importance, that we must do everything we can. First of all, to help married couples to know how important their vocation is. How it truly is that it's a call from God to love each other, together be co-creators with Him of new human life. But there's nothing more beautiful or more worthwhile to give one's life than to be a husband and a father, a wife and a mother. And that these are wonderful vocations that I think, again, people sometimes in our culture, they get so attracted to other ways that can be good ways that they can contribute to society, but they fail to see that if we don't have strong families, our culture and the very fabric of our society collapses.
Why do you think that in some ways the church's message is being, if not drowned out, but at least rather overlooked by so many people? Why is it so difficult to get its message across in today's society?
Well, here in the United States, if you look at our secular media, at the movies and television shows, there are so few positive presentations of marriage and family life. And I think that this has had an effect over time. The negative messages that are so often part of our popular cultural mass communication. So I think this is what in many ways is forming people. In the church, I believe we have to try in our own way to use these same methods of communication, but use them in a very constructive way to support marriage and family life. But I think it's really a culture war in some sense, and part of the reason why church's message is being overwhelmed is because of what we find in our mass media today.
Turning to Bishop Kurtz, what does he believe is the biggest single threat facing the family today?
I believe that the greatest threat to marriage and family in the United States is an improper understanding of freedom. I believe that our church rightly speaks of freedom as the true opportunity to embrace God's plan in our lives, what has been called very beautifully a freedom for excellence. Unfortunately, I think freedom in our secular culture often is simply a freedom to say no. And one effect of this movement of such freedom is the willingness to give up on a marriage commitment at the first sign of difficulty.
So, ultimately, where does the institution of marriage and the family stand? And what does its future look like in our increasingly secularized world? Bishop Kurtz again.
It is very difficult to read the future. And, of course, there are enough attacks and elements within our society that speak against marriage. However, a Christian hope that is based on Jesus in his power leading us always has us, with both eyes wide open, look to the future and see signs of hope in our own culture. And I continue to be optimistic. However, I know that we need to say yes to God's grace. I believe that in the United States, the pastoral initiative that the bishops of the United States have taken on marriage is a three-year opportunity for us to renew our will to assist families and especially assist young people who are of marrying age to choose the right alternatives, embracing a vocation of marriage in their life.
Well, thanks there to Bishop Joseph Kurtz of Knoxville in Tennessee, the head of the U.S. Bishops' Committee on Marriage and the Family, and to Archbishop Joseph Naumann of Kansas City, also a member of this same committee. Thanks, too, to my colleague Susie Hodges.